and Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Edward Kwan, and we're going to talk about his practice in psychiatry and his experiences with past life regression and his new book called Soul Search, The Healing Possibilities of Past Lives. How are you, Dr. Kwan?
Fine, thank you, Eva. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming on with me tonight. So before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and where people can find you?
Okay, I am a physician, and more specifically a psychiatrist. And I went to school, University of Louisville, and medical school. Went to for my psychiatric training at New York University Psychiatric Bellevue Medical Center, and after that went into the practice of psychiatry. My practice was a general practice, and it's kind of interesting how I eventually got involved in past lives, but quite frankly, it was nothing I expected when I was involved in my training. For those who'd like to reach me or ask a question or learn a little more about me on the web, I can be reached by my website of improvewhoyouare.com, www.improvewhoyouare.com.
Okay, thank you. So before we, my first question for you is, what is past life regression, first of all?
Well, the important thing, and I'd like to preface it and start ending, the most important thing for your listeners to understand that to access a past life or to go to a past life, one has to access the subconscious. And this is very important. I'm going to go slow and say that again because this is extremely important. To go to a past life, one needs to access the subconscious. The subconscious, I believe, is a part of the soul. That is the constant. That is always there. The subconscious is always part of your soul. The variable is that the soul will be go into various bodies. So whatever body we are in or what the soul is in, when we access the past life, we are actually accessing the subconscious. The subconscious stores everything. All the memories we've ever had, be it in this life or in past lives. And what we do is access those memories. And we do that by utilizing hypnosis. A lot of people, not all people, but some people get frightened by that term. And actually many people use hypnosis without calling that. For instance, for those who meditate and go into a meditative state, really they are going into the alpha state. And if I may, at this point, I don't want to get ahead of the game or questions you might ask me, but what we want to do is go from the beta state, which we are in right now, we're talking back and forth, and we go then into the alpha state, and I help the person go into that alpha state. That is the subconscious state. And it's important to understand that this is an altered state of consciousness. You are not asleep. You are in complete control while you are in this subconscious or altered state of consciousness state. So, if you wish to come out of this state whenever you want, when we are accessing the past life or at any time, you can come out. You are always in control.
So it's not like those people on those entertainment shows where they do weird things that they're not being able to control, that someone's suggesting.
Absolutely, yeah. Those people who usually do those weird things are using that that hypnosis as a tool to say, okay, I could do this and have fun with it. But they're really, they're always in control. They're not doing anything that they would not want to do.
Okay. Is there any Before I start asking you questions about your work and your patients, I want to just ask a couple other questions.
Sure.
Is there any evidence of hard science, like brain firing patterns or EEG studies that show something different when this is happening?
I am not aware. I know studies have been undertaken and are still being looked into, but I am not aware of any definitive work that has said, okay, this is what is happening. We do know there's altered state brainwaves in the subconscious state, but I don't think there is any hard evidence really at this point.
Do you know if there's any hard evidence that's not studies, that just someone has told you, some of your physician friends or research friends?
Well, and that's very interesting because we have many anecdotal stories. And there was a very famous, for instance, oncologist, and he was doing surgery, and he's a vascular surgeon, and he eventually started to find out that a lot of people that he had been working with were getting better by prayer. And as he became well-known and went on at different TV shows, et cetera, a lot of people throughout the United States started to contact him and say, you know, I've gotten better by such and such, and it wasn't due to my medicine, it wasn't due to my surgery, et cetera, et cetera. I also have had many people tell me that they've had experiences that they just could not explain. Let me give you an example of what I mean. I was giving a talk one time, and this woman came up to me after the talk and told me that she was traveling someplace with her husband and son, a young son about 4 or 5 years old, and they were going into an area that they had not been before, and the son looked around and he said, Mommy, there's a cemetery that I was buried in. And they looked at him and never had done anything with past lives. And he then proceeded to tell him the name of the person, and he said, let's go over to, and they went, stopped the car, went over the gravestone, and sure enough, there was the name on the gravestone of the person whom he said he was. Now, that's an anecdotal story. There are so many of these that come about. Let me give you another one. I believe deja vus, for instance, are oftentimes, not all deja vus, are past life experiences. And I was interviewing an individual, and she had told me that she and her friends at one time had gone off to Europe, and they were in a city that was foreign to the whole group, and they had decided to eat a certain type of food, and they said, oh, they all agreed, and then this one individual piped up and said, you know, if we go down such and such street and gave the directions, we will come upon this type of restaurant, and we will have this food. And they all looked at him and said, oh, you must have read the book, the description of what was going on or something. I said, no, I just know it. And they followed his directions, and sure enough, they ended up in the restaurant that he said. And, of course, I believe he lived there in another time. So the old saying that that you probably heard of and probably a lot of your listeners heard of is, you know, if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it must be a duck.
Okay. I think I would stop, too, if my 5-year-old said I was buried there.
It's
my attention.
Yeah, I could give you another story. I was working with this couple, and as I told you, my practice really was not, I did not go into practice with the purpose of entering past lives. I was very scientifically trained, and I was working with this couple one time and dealing with problems, nothing to do with past lives, and it came about that this woman started to tell story and then finished up about she and her husband took a vacation, were traveling out west, never been in that area before, was going up a mountain, and as she was, they started up the mountain, she said to her husband, you know, when we get to this top of the mountain, there's going to be a house. And as they were going up the mountain, and she related to this, she was describing what she would see with the picket fence, with the type of field there was, and sure enough, and they got to the top of the mountain, there was exactly what she described. Well, she looked at her husband, the husband looked at her and said, wow, these people were not into past lives. They were not talking about it. They just, in fact, I think they told very few people about that because they were afraid, what would people say?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a couple more questions. When I get through with my questions, then I'm going to let you run with your book and how that happened. just have a few things. How does one know if it's a past or a future life? And regardless of which one it is it really past and future, or is it all simultaneously? Or do you have any comment on that?
I do. It's a very interesting question. I wish I had all the answers to that. In my seminars, in my talks about this, I do actually exercise. I do an interactive talk, and I do exercises with the audience, and we take them into a past life. And I do what is called, what I call an experimental progression into a future life. So I've had experiences with people trying this, and I say experimental because I'm not quite sure exactly. I think a lot of this is based on energy levels and different planes that we're in. I like to give the example, for instance, if you could picture yourself in a helicopter and you're looking down below and you see this individual in a car, and the car is going to an intersection, a fork in the road, and off to the left there's a lot of traffic, and off to the right it's empty. And depending on the direction they take and where they will going into the future. Well, this person above in the helicopter is seeing the future. If he somehow could radio down via energy level to the person in the car, take the right fork because it's empty and no traffic, well, that would help. That individual on a different plane, a different level, can see the past, the present, and the future. Well, in my work with past lives, I don't try to document, per se, and this is a good point, Eva, if I may. In all my work with all the people that I've worked with, I'm not out to try to prove this. I believe that past life work is very healing, and that's why in my book, Soul Search, The Healing Possibilities of Past Lives, this is what it's all about. But in the process of going back into a past life, many times, There is documentation, or there is facts that come out that we can document afterwards. Now, this is interesting, if I may. I'm going to segue into this. There's a term called cryptoamnesia. Now, that means that what you have learned, for instance, in this lifetime is long forgotten, and if you access it then by hypnosis, then you remember it. Well, that cryptoamnesia is the forgetting of that and then recalling that. Now, the people who say that there is no such thing as a past life and just say, okay, we documented this or we saw this, they'll say, oh, you have learned about it in your studies or you've seen this on television, et cetera, et cetera. So you can't win. One is that you're saying, okay, there is this example of something that has occurred in the past life that we're documenting. Again, this individual is saying, no, it's because you've learned it. So, and then the individual will say, okay, now show me how you know what's real or not. So, in my experience with doing this with multitudes, it's, you know, different things come up. For instance, in my book, and as I point out, and with others, that there'll be examples of coins that they'll describe in the coin, and it'll be very specific, and then they'll look it up. And by the way, I usually don't look it up. I'll leave it up to the individual, and then they come and show me what it was. That, you know, there was this coin, and it's the exact description, or they'll say the streets, corners, and all. Sometimes be very specific and say the type of streets or the different landmarks. So this does come up fairly, not all the time, not in all past lives, but this does come up fairly often.
So did that answer the question? Is it really past, future, or is everything experienced all simultaneous and you're tapping into something else?
Well, again, that goes to the question whether it's all. That's why I used the helicopter. The helicopter above looking down, that would be all happening at the same time. But what I do in my work, I try to take, for the most part, I take people back into a past existence. And whether it's happening at the same time, I'm not sure.
I'm thinking about scientists, you know, physicists talking about parallel universes. So
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Thinking along that line, does anybody ever say anything about that when they do whatever it is they do?
Not that I'm aware of. Now, I realize that there are people who are studying this, but I am not an expert in this. I really couldn't address that to the...
I mean, any of your patients, do they ever say anything about being in a parallel place?
No, I've never had a patient. I've never had a patient tell me that, that they were in a parallel place.
Do you know if future is a variable? In other words, has anyone any of your patients, I'm just asking you my questions that I personally and my listeners are curious about. Has anyone experienced a future life discuss synchronicities that were later experienced in a real life so that they could tag it as, oh, that's what I saw, and I know that at this point, at this synchronicity, that tells me I need to do a certain thing. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense, but the short answer to that, no. I've never had either a patient that I've worked with spontaneously go into a future or talk about synchronicity. No, I've not had that. I've not done that work, and I have not had that experience with my patients.
Okay. How many have you gotten any information about how many times a soul incarnates and why it would and how that's determined?
I can't say how many times, but I can answer that question. It is my belief, and this is the core, I believe that in the creation that souls were split off from God, and you know we've heard the common term old souls and new souls. Because oftentimes I'm asked a question, and along the lines of the question that you asked me, geometrically there are more people on the earth now than there were in many times. How does one keep going back into the souls? Well, I do believe that there are souls so-called out there, and that in the lifetimes that we eventually more and more of the souls enter different bodies. So there are the new souls and the old souls.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer the question, or did I leave something out?
I think so. I think so. How many, do you know, have any information about how many bodies a soul can inhabit at one time? Only one? More than one? Numerous ones?
I believe at any one time it is just one body that the soul can enter. I believe very strongly what we are here in our lifetimes is our karma, and by that I mean is that we are here to resolve the issues in this lifetime that we have not resolved in past lifetimes. And therefore, and also in my experience, I've not had any duplicity or anything else. The souls have just entered, it's just been in one body.
Okay. Have any of your patients disclosed anything of interest from the future?
Again, going back to, no, they have
okay.
not. We have not focused on the future. Again, of course, my work had been resolving issues and trying to help them in this lifetime based on what has happened in the past. If I may, and I think maybe this is a good point, and this is what the basis of my work is, I believe we heal, we get better in three different manners. One, by going into a past life, by understanding and going back to significant times in that past lifetime that helps us in the understanding of what is happening in this lifetime. Two, by going through the death experience in a past life, oftentimes there's resolutions of fears of phobias in this lifetime. This has happened many times with my patients. And three, when we die in the past lifetime, our soul is released, in, as you know, into the in-between state, and it is this state that oftentimes we learn our lessons. I help the person understand what lessons needed to be learned in that lifetime and how they may be applicable for this lifetime. That's very important. And at times in that past lifetimes, they may have their guides or their angels with them. So you can see I'm focusing in on the past to help the present, the past lives, to help them deal with the present.
I promise I'm going to give you a lot of time to talk about that. I try to get a little bit outside the box.
Okay, sure.
That's why I'm just trying to get my questions that are outside the box answered before I give you, because I'm going to let you just say whatever you want to say when I get to that. So, and I believe you. I believe the same thing you say, too. I think
okay.
You're right. I'd like to know, do you think a soul knows what it's choosing before it incarnates?
Yes. You can see by my emphatic mm-hmm. answer, yes. I believe in the in-between soul, the soul will choose to resolve, come back because they need to help somebody resolve the issues, whatever it is. So they choose the body to enter into, which will help to resolve those issues, and that's our karma, yes.
Now, that I have to ask this question here.
Sure.
I thought about this today, and I know it's a controversial thing, but as it relates to abortion, do you think that the baby, and I'm not pro or against it, okay? I don't care. Whatever everybody wants to do is fine. I just want to know what you think about this. Do you think the baby, before it comes, the soul, before it comes into a baby's body, knows what that's going to happen, that that's going to happen, and so it chooses that body for that reason to learn some lesson? Or do you have any opinion on that at all? I would imagine yes. Since
yes, I do have some opinions on that. Actually, I thought you were going to ask a little variation of that question, and and I don't recall. I did some research, and from people who were studying that very closely, and they were trying to determine from best of their work when the soul would enter the body concerning about a baby's death. And I'm not sure what their end result of the research was, but I think they concluded that it was about the third or fourth month of gestation, but I'm not really sure of that, the soul went into the body. I would expand on that, and leaving that part of it, oftentimes the question that I field along those lines is, what about crib death? You know, that's such a sad thing. And this is basically what you asked me. You know, why would a soul come into a body if they're going to die maybe at, you know, 2 or 3 months of age, you know, and type of thing. And I think that's important. Yes, I do think they come in there for a reason, and I think that is a lesson that may be needed for the parents or for whatever, because that's so sad. Why would you come back in a death, either an abortion or in a crib death, et cetera? But I do think there are reasons for that.
I just think, I had this experience happen. You know, I'm a psychic, right?
Yes.
Well, I'm an intuitive, whatever you want to call it. And I had this woman I pulled up at a gas station one time around the corner from my house, and she saw, it was about 10 o'clock at night, just after my radio show, as a matter of fact, one night. Mm-hmm. And she came and she got in my car, and she was from Africa. She had that real strong African accent. You couldn't understand her very well. And she wouldn't get out from my car. And she finally said, "I know you have the gift. I want you to do that for me." And so I didn't want to do it, but she wouldn't get out of my car, and so I said, okay, I'll do it. And so I listened, because that's how I get my information, and it said, "Tell this woman that I am the pregnancy gone bad, and tell her that I'm okay, and that she'll know that it's me because she had a husband with two wives. And how would you know that if you didn't know that this was really me? And tell her that I chose that she shouldn't feel guilty for it." So I said to her, before I said anything to her, I said, "Do you have a husband with two wives?" And she went, yes, I'm from Africa, and I'm from a tribe, and my husband has two wives. So I guess the reason I asked that question is because so many women feel guilty like they murdered, and so many people hate because of it. And if it's the soul's choice, then it's kind of like, you know, there wasn't a choice about it, that was a preordained thing to happen. Is that what you think?
Yeah, well, the soul, when it comes back, let give you an example. One of the women I worked with, and they went back and they saw a body on a heap. It was a young child, and the child died, and the soul was released back. And when we went back into the in-between state, the lessons were there, that the individual that I was working with needed to learn with death will happen, and they were going to, and how to deal with death. There were going to be probably some deaths around her, and we were working around that theme. Unfortunately, is when the soul went into the body for that particular lesson to resolve that particular issue.
Okay. All right, one more question. Do you think, and then I'm going to your book and you have the rest of the show.
Oh, that's all right.
Do you think a soul has free will? And if so, how does it account for its misery?
Did you say, how does it account for its misery?
Account for its misery. If it has free, if it does, how does it account for its misery? Otherwise, it could just will it away.
I'm not quite sure I understand the latter. I think the formal part of the question is that the soul has free will. Yes, I believe we do have free will. And then in our bodies, I don't think anything is predestined. As a psychic, I think you have seen probably certain things into the future. And I know, understand you asked me the future. I wish I understood more of it myself. But we do have, I believe, free will to decide what to do. Certain occurrences will befriend us, we will encounter, but we can choose to pick it up or not. Maybe I could expand on that for a second. Am I answering the question, or am I going off on a tangent?
Whatever your answer is the answer. I mean, you're a doctor, and you have some outside-the-box thinking. That's why I want to ask that your question.
Sure. After I graduated, I should say, from medical school, I wanted to be either an intern, a family doctor, or a surgeon. And I chose to enter into what they called a mixed medical internship, which is essentially 6 months of surgery, 4 months of medicine, and 2 months of an elective. And I had just was coming off my rotation of surgery, and I was extremely tired, and I decided to look for something that I would be able to relax. And I saw a psychiatric elective, which would be 8 to 5, no weekends. And I said, this is for me. I'll just be able to relax, take it easy. And I chose to do that. Well, as it turned out, you know, I had a mentor, a teacher, who was just fantastic and completely turned my way of thinking around. And I eventually chose, it was my free will, to go into the field of psychiatry. Now, I say it in that manner because it presented itself. This mentor presented itself. I wish I would have known. Well, I shouldn't say I wish I would have known. Somebody might have predicted I would have taken this elective. I don't know. But once that was presented to me, I had to make the choice of where I would go with that. So I do believe we have free will. I don't believe that the soul, if I understand the word that you use in misery, I don't look at it that way. I think the soul is a very enlightening experience. Again, made up, the subconscious is part of the soul. Many things happen to us. There are always reasons for this. And how we choose to handle it is our free will.
Okay. Now, thank you, by the way. I mean, I'm just asking questions. I'm not giving what I think or arguing or anything.
I understand. I'd love to hear your responses and what your thoughts are on this, because as a psychic, it might be somewhat different, or there might be different concepts of that.
Well, okay, then I'll tell you one of my thoughts. I think,
please.
I used to think we had complete free will. When my enlightenment first happened years ago,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know, but a spontaneous event occurred that changed the way I think. And when it first happened, I kept thinking that I would tell everybody, yes, we have free will and we can do anything we like. We can manifest anything we like. We can change our lives. And then as time passed and I spent more time in silence and more time observing, you know, then observing reality, I mean, just literally standing back and watching myself from a third party's perspective is what I mean by that.
Mm-hmm.
Then I realized that we're not driving the car. It's like we're a little 2-year-old strapped in a car seat with a little yellow steering wheel. And we think that we're driving the car, but really some other and greater power is driving the car. And the only time we realize, in my opinion, that we're not driving this car is when we come to the stop sign and the playground's on the right and the grocery store is to the left, and we turn our steering wheel to drive to the playground and the higher power turns his steering wheel to turn into the grocery store. Where do you think the car's going? And at that moment, we learn we're not driving the car. And I'd had that same argument with my teacher originally.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I wonder, did you choose to practice psychiatry, or was that just you had no choice but to go that way, and you didn't know you didn't have no choice?
That's a very interesting question, and if you go back to what I was just saying, I had no desire at the graduation of medical school, taking my internship, I had no thoughts that I would ever enter psychiatry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that mentor that I met in my 2 months of an elective changed my way of thinking completely. I'm saying, now I could have then chosen to say, well, that was interesting and that was fun and enjoyable. I'm relaxed. Let me still go into surgery or internal medicine. Or my free will, and because I meant this particular man, I decided to choose the field of psychiatry. It's so there's where I, you know, we're saying free will. Let me, if I can too, expand. And, you know, we all face, and this is something, as you mentioned, traumatic events in our lifetimes, be it one thing or another. I think if we all recognize as we go back in time, there are various traumatic events. You had one that helped for you to choose the direction you were taking. I believe it was free will that eventually you chose to go in a direction that you wanted. When I went into the practice now of psychiatry, it was a general practice. Again, based on science, I did but I prescribed medications, you know, et cetera, in the standard practice of psychiatry. I had then several episodes, I'm going to use quote-unquote traumatic events that, you know, that occurred to me. I was taught, by the way, hypnosis in my residency training. I had been using it off and on. And I was working with a particular young woman, and we were going back to an earlier part of her present life. We were doing some regression to an earlier part of her life. And I know that's debatable, and there are a lot of pros and cons about that. We won't get into that at this time, but we were going back to that. Now, one particular session, and I knew her well, she kind of looked at me and kind of strange, and she spoke kind of differently, and I wasn't quite really sure what was happening. And so I have a yellow pad on my lap. I gave her the yellow pad. I had a pencil, and I gave her the pencil. Now, if you can visualize this, when she took the pencil, she took it not as you normally would take a pencil to write, but she took it like as she was ready to carve in the sand, and I asked her the year, and she, like carving in the sand, proceeded to write the Roman numeral 4. And eventually we came out of the trance state, and I looked at her, and she looked at me, and, you know, there's complete memory of this, and I wasn't really quite sure what to do with that, and she wasn't quite sure. We just sort of put it in the back of our minds, and I said, okay, let me start reading. This stimulated me to let me explore a little about past lives. Subsequently, what was happening to me is when I would drive my car, every time I would start the engine to my car, I would hear a loud crash, you know, screeching of brakes and a crash, and there was an accident. And this occurred, it was on for about a year, and then, unfortunately, there was the crash that actually occurred. I was hospitalized, overnight. Actually, I was kind of lucky. I had what's called a cord contusion, and 1 millimeter more could have been disastrous. And I said, okay, and that's precognition. You know, I didn't believe in that. Those things were completely foreign to me. You know, what is this? It's not scientifically proven. How could we accept this? I didn't know. Then a third thing happened, and this is sort of the sealer for me. I was practicing, and my office was in a medical building, a three-story medical building, and within the building there was a real estate office, or the people who took care of the building. And I was coming back from lunch one day, and I decided to go to that office. I needed to ask them something about the lease or something in my office. And I walked into their office, and the phone rang, and the secretary there answered the phone and said, Dr. Klein, this call's for you. And I picked up the phone, and there was nobody there. And I gave her back the phone, and I said, ooh, wait a second. Nobody knew I was going to that office. It was a spontaneous decision coming back from lunch. I didn't tell my secretary or anybody. I checked their phone number with to see if it was similar to my office phone number or my home phone number. Nothing like it at all. And I said, you know, to me, this was a message that, you know, there is more to the scientific method. There was more things that I understood that I needed to explore this. I felt like I was being told this. And from there on in, I started to even hasten my studies, started to then work more and more with past lives, and developed a field, my work into this area. So I responded to those traumatic events, what I call traumatic, in a manner. This, you know, I could have said, on the other hand, whoo, you know, this is weird, you know, let me just put it out of my mind. But I chose to go ahead and the direction and follow up on that.
Very, very interesting. Very interesting. So tell me, who is Carol?
Carol is, for your listeners, is a lady, a woman that actually I knew from many, many years ago. Her children and my children went to school together, and she is a writer of an author of nothing of books, nothing to do with past lives at all. And following these episodes that I described to you, following this, I decided after a while, I said, you know, it would be interesting for me to possibly write a book about this on the own. I have so much to offer, I felt, to get across to people and what was becoming a very strong belief of mine. And I had no idea to write a book. I had never written a book. And so I knew of her, and I contacted her, and I said, can we meet and get together? I have this idea. And she came over to my office, and we discussed it. And she said, you know, that would be great. And she offered, you know, let me write it from, if you were okay, from the first-person point of view of experiencing it. You know, I think there's a sports writer who used to write a lot about experiencing working in the different arenas, baseball, football, whatever, and then write about what occurred. She said, let me experience this. If you can, let me go into the past lives, and then we will write about it. And so this is what we did. I described to her all about what we're doing and how it works. And she readily went into a past life. And it was interesting, and I have it in my book, is after the first two times, she said, you know, I don't know if I believe this. I'm a writer. I have a great imagination. I just must maybe making this all up. You know, and that was her first, as many people have that, and as I'm sure you realize that, many people in your experience have said things such similar. And maybe I'm just making this all up. And so just, we're not trying to prove anything. Let's just do the experience and see if it helps. And she had a lot of healing. And we did, I guess overall, during the course of the book, there were about 14, 15 past lives. And we had many experiences where she was able to document as best she could some of the past lives and where she was. She had, for instance, and this is interesting, and as I said, oftentimes the healing on how one dies, the death, resolves in the healing of issues in this life. Well, in one of Carol's past lives, she was fearful of, well, I shouldn't say that. In her present life, let me back up a second. In her present life, she is fearful of heights. She had a phobia of heights, would not climb things, in a plane, would not look out the windows, something of that, you know, of that nature. So in a particular past life, she went back, and she was a young girl in a hut, and some raiders were invading the village, and they went to this hut. And now she's I'm summarizing this, but she's describing this in great detail to me. And they singled her out, sort of forced her with spears over to a cliff, and pushed her over the cliff, and she fell to her death. Now, I know this is maybe to a lot of people, it's an, oh, yeah, right thing. But she lost her fear of heights. She, and I know her, she didn't make it up. In fact, I knew her, don't know her husband, and he told me they, this was where I was in Tampa at the time, and they had box seats to a, in football they had up in the press box, and she would hate to go up in the elevators, would have to close her eyes and all things like that. And subsequently, she went up there, and her husband looked at her and said, what's the matter, you know, and she said, what are you doing? No problem. She said, no problem. And they were building something on a new house, and she had to go up on the scaffolding. And she climbed up the scaffolding without any problem and looked at it, and her husband was aware. And she lost a fear of heights, which is held to the present time. Now, I asked her husband, I know her husband, and I said, now what do you think of all this? He said, you know, and he's a non-believer. And he looked at me, and he said, and he didn't know what to say because he saw in his own life, and she wasn't faking it or anything like that. And he looked at me, and he said, if it works, it works. And that was the end of it. And that's fine. You know, you can see. He just didn't know what to make of it, and that was the best answer he could give.
So have you found out if do people seem to have particular illnesses or problems related to particular experiences or problems in past lives? Does that make sense?
Yes. Well, I'm going to change the question around a little.
Okay.
People often come to me with problems that they have, and they want to go to a past life to see if how that problem came about and if they can resolve it in this lifetime based on what they learn in the past life. Does that make sense, or am I...
Yes.
Okay. So, for instance, let me give you an example of one. Actually, it was with Carol again. In her book, in the present time, she is very protective of her sister. And she would be overwhelming to the sister. We went back into a past life now, and during that lifetime, she was a adolescent in an African village. She different race. And by the way, my experience, races change, sex changes. For instance, in not to get too tangential, but she my work with Carol, she was a forgot the exact, but she was about a woman 6 times, a man 8 times, almost half and half, different races and all. And that's been my experience with other people, too. They don't stay in one particular race or sex. So anyway, she went back. She was in Africa, and her job was to take care of this young girl, and she was responsible for the girl. And she took this girl off, sort of babysit her, and put her down by the... I should say the roadside, put her down by a river, and she went in swimming into the river, and she came back, and the baby was gone, and they found the remains, and for, I know it sounds gross, but they found some of the remains devoured by a lion, and it was killed. What we found out when we went back into, then after we go through the death experience, we go into the in-between state, and the lessons learned, we recognize that this child, they were soulmates, they traveled together, that this baby was her sister in the present lifetime, and the lesson, she felt responsible for the death, and that's why she was being so overprotective to the sister in this time. Once she felt this and learned that, she was able to deal with it, and the issue was a non-issue. She then was able to go on without having to, again, being overprotective to the sister. So that has happened many, many times. If I may just go on to, of course, the death experience. I had one time a young man come to me who was fearful, you know, of water. And so, again, you can see they came to me with problems. And we kind of speculated that might have been due to a drowning. And long story short, we did go back to a past life. And he did experience the drowning. And by the way, again, this is also can be very vivid. I always tell the individual, if you're experiencing such as a drowning, I will not let you go through like all the gurgling. You could imagine the discomfort that somebody would feel during drowning as they go through their death experience. I will take you out of it so you won't experience any problems. Or I will let the soul help you release the soul to travel to the in-between state so the actual death will end. So we did that, and going into the past life, sure enough, there was the resolution of the fear of water because that's, in fact, what happened during his death. So, again, and I know, you know, I can almost feel or maybe feel, oh, this sounds so simple and everything else. I'm summarizing a lot. Now, let me give you the other parts of it, if I may, unless you want to cut me off. But
No, listening intently.
Okay. In my experience, and this is also borne out by the literature, approximately 90% of the population is hypnotizable. Of that 10%, usually it's a fear of loss of control, which doesn't occur, as I said, but if we can get that through with the people, that 10% will
have that. I had that experience. I mean, I thought that's exactly what it was, fear of loss of control.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get rid of that? How do you let that go?
Eventually, with the trust of the individual that you might be working with. You know, if, for instance, as a psychic, I don't know if people come to you or choose to come to you or are working with somebody, but if somebody feels real comfortable with you, they'll allow you to explore with them what is going on. If they can feel comfortable with the individual, if they're coming to me and feel comfortable, And unfortunately, I used to have people travel long distances to see me, and they wanted to do this, and still there was a fear there, and I felt very bad. You know, it wasn't everybody that I could take right into the past life, or couldn't get them into the trance state. Of that, by the way, of that 90%, approximately, in my experience, 70% could enter the past life, 70% of the 90%. So, again, you can see not everybody that I've worked with was readily enter that. And oftentimes when people really didn't know me and they would come for the first time, I would feel disappointed for them, and as they would, you can imagine. So it's not just something you can say, okay, I'm going to do it. But we do have, as you can see, a fairly high percentage that can enter this.
I guess it would make you feel like a huge relief when you finally see what the thing is, so that you just kind of go, I would imagine to me.
And also, and as I say there, you're absolutely correct, Eva. But a lot of people too, and I, you know, they'll say, okay, the great thing is, again, we have resolution of the problems. That's the goal. And I always tell them, whether you feel that it was your imagination or not, it worked. And that, to me, is the important thing. I do think, and as a lot of people do feel, that enter a past life, but we want to help people. You know, in the Freudian concept of work, when you go back to what you're accessing the subconscious and working with that is the resolution. So this is what we are also dealing, is we're working with the subconscious. So you can see it's all tied in. I don't want to say Freudian with past lives, but the point being is that we're trying to access the subconscious. And if I may segue, for those who do choose to go to my website, just who I'm going to say, improvewhoyouare.com, you could see I am what I consider a traditional and non-traditional. The non-traditional is being my work with the past lives. The traditional is being my other work. I work with athletes. I work in the more traditional sense by utilizing subconscious. We know, for instance, in holistic medicine, of course, that's a great field in itself, but there's a lot of work with the subconscious. So to me, the subconscious is the most important aspect of it all. And I said my website because you could see those who choose to enter it, how I try to relate the subconscious to the conventional and the non-conventional.
I'm curious, why did they not, you weren't prepared for this to happen, you said, when it
correct,
first happened.
Correct, correct. Yes.
Why did they not, your teacher, why did the teaching institutions not prepare their young physicians for this when obviously it happened?
Sure. I was very interested in, I tried to find out the reason to this and statistics to this. Of course, you know, this is not based on the scientific model. I think the question you asked me at the beginning about EEGs being done, I think a lot of work needs to be done to help with the proving of this. But there's not. There's not the scientific factual, as we were saying, there's the anecdotal evidence right now. But, so it's not of the scientific model. So, in direct answer to your question, I think that's the reason. Let me give you another figure, at least there's a statistic. Approximately, if I remember, this is an old one, so I don't know if it's probably about the same thing. Approximately 67% of the population believes in some sort of life after life. 23% or something of that nature believe in reincarnation. Of the population, of psychiatrists, only 5% believe in reincarnation and regression therapy. So you could see the medical model really has not been sold, or the medical community has not been sold on this approach.
I have a question. What was your personal spiritual experience? I want to say religious experience. Were you Jewish? Were you raised Jewish? Were you raised Christian?
Yes.
Did that play a part in your belief system at all?
Not really. Well, maybe really in a part, because I am of Judaism, of background, although I want to say more cultural than religious. Mm-hmm. And I did some research as best I could to find out what is the difference. And I'm going to throw out a big question. I don't know if I have the answer, but I'll show you my answer. What is the difference between being religious and being spiritual? Mm-hmm. I believe, and by the way, I'm spiritual.
Me too.
And good. I shouldn't say a lot of people have their different feelings, but I believe in spiritual. And I believe that being religious is a belief in God with a dogma. Being spiritual is a belief in God without a dogma, without an edict. So I have a belief in God, and maybe that goes along with my cultural background, but I don't need a formal religion. And I can give you many examples of researching it, but I don't think that would—I don't think you want it on this program. But that is where I am right now, personally.
Okay, I was just curious.
Sure.
Because people would want to know, you know, where did
sure.
you come from? I grew up Baptist, converted to a conservative Jew, and now I'm nothing but so spiritual. So you've got about 5 minutes. What would you like to say to anybody, your peers? Oh, another thing. Is there a diagnostic code?
There's a psychiatric, again, when you say diagnosis, psychiatric diagnostic code for all psychiatric illnesses or problems, but there is no, to my knowledge, diagnostic code for any work involving past life regression.
So if that's their problem, if they have some kind of thing hung over from a past life, how do you treat them and get their bill paid?
Well, in the past. Oh, by the way, when you said in the past, we don't when I was working in the past. I say that because let me just preface it. I am not in practice anymore, so I am not seeing people individually or work with individual people. What I am doing, and this is a sort of a story in itself, but I am went back to the work of giving seminars. I feel that I can reach more people at this point this way, and so that's what I'm doing, and I'm traveling around the country and actually will be traveling hopefully around the world and be doing this and meeting people in this manner. But in the past, and answering to your past about that, there's no code. People who were coming to see me for this was really with self-pay.
Okay. Do you do what you do over the phone? If somebody wanted to get a session with you, can you do it over the phone?
I haven't. I like to. I don't know if other people do.
Or
I'm sure
Skype.
I'm sorry. Or Skype.
Or Skype.
Well, I was going to say. I like to look at the individual and see what they're experiencing. Because, like I said, mm-hmm. if they're having problems, I could tell how they're going. I could usually tell by looking at them and working with them. I'm very much an individual who needs to see the individual and see what's happening. Now, that being said. That's working with a one-on-one. During my seminars, I do a past life regression for the audience. But the purpose of that is not for them to go through the healing process. We're not working on that. It's really for them to experience the ability to go into a past life. So it is somewhat different. And of course, there are different ways, different methods when you're working with somebody and taking them into the trance state to help them go deeper into the alpha state, which you can't do on a over the phone or something of that nature.
We've only got a few more. Oh, bless you. A few more minutes. Where's your next few seminars in case someone wants to come?
At this time. It looks like it's going to be, I'm in Vegas. It looks like be in Vegas. It's not been definitively set up yet, so I can't really speak, but hopefully we'll be here at one of the hotels here in Vegas. We're starting that. If anybody is interested, again, on my website, go on to the contact person there who is now working with me and establishing the seminars, and they will help you set up any other seminars that anybody might be interested in going to.
And your website is improvewhoyouare.com, right?
Right. No spaces, just improve. improveur.com.
Now you've got 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. What would you, anything you want to say?
Well, I would say what I believe is the efficaciousness of this. I believe it's truly a help. There is so much that we need to learn and to understand. We don't have all the answers. For people to keep an open mind, to explore, for anybody that they choose to work with to feel comfortable, to make sure that they're comfortable with the individual and understand their background, whoever it is. There's a lot that's going to be happening. I know there are many individuals, as you know and as you told me, who are exploring many different avenues and areas that we just don't have all the answers for at this time. So it's an exciting time. And again, with past lives, just to keep an open mind and to explore.
Dr. Kwan, thank you so much for taking the time to come on my show tonight. It was great, very interesting. I didn't mean to cut you off when I say that. I know if I don't just go into the next question that I'll keep on that, keep questioning for everyone whenever we get the whole interview done. So know that, please.
Well, thank
All right,
you very
thank
much.
You, and please come back sometime.
I'd love to. Thank you very much.
Good night.
Night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health. Integral Health. Integral Health. You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health. Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Harris.